Today on Sticks In, it's Positive Friday. We are going through everything you need to get ready for the lacrosse weekend. We're talking NLL playoff scenarios. We're talking through the state of things in college lacrosse, including where things are in some conferences, every matchup for the weekend. And we will also touch briefly on the latest and recently announced PLL Hall of Fame, Pro Lacrosse Hall of Fame class. All that coming your way. Thank you again for coming back. Please do leave a like, subscribe, download, all that good stuff. And let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia. I'm glad you're here. We have a very long list of things to get to today, so let's just get right into it. No dilly-dally here. We'll start with the pros. Let's take it inside first, the NLL. It is the final week of the regular season. We have six teams that have a playoff spot locked up. Toronto has the one seed locked. San Diego has the two seed locked. Those teams are going. They cannot change positions or whatever happens this weekend. After them, we have Albany has a spot, Georgia has a spot, Buffalo has a spot, Halifax has a spot. There can still be shuffling in terms of who winds up where, I believe, with the other spots after those first two. We have a couple teams that have been fully eliminated at this point and can only be spoilers this weekend. Las Vegas is out, Billy is out, Colorado is out, and Calgary is out. We have five teams remaining for two playoff spots that are still available. So I have the NLL weekend primer up at sticksandlacrosse.com. You can read kind of more about it there. It's a little bit different this week. It's just focused on those teams playing for a playoff spot. A massive shout out is due here to one to Graham Pirro and two to Lacrosse Culture Daily. They have a great rundown of all these scenarios and all the things that can happen, from the place teams can finish in and how they can finish there and the final state, all that stuff. It's all Lacrosse Culture Daily. If you're not reading their stuff every day, you should be. Bookmark their site. Go check it out. But they have the full breakdown. For the purposes of today, we're just going to go through real quick, as quickly as I guess we can, because these things are not easy. The scenarios for each of the five teams still alive for a playoff spot, what they need to have happen this weekend to make the playoffs. So starting with Vancouver, obviously Vancouver, I can't even believe they're even in this conversation. This team was 2-8 after 10 games. 2-8! More than halfway through their games, they were 2-8, and they can make the playoffs this weekend because they've been that hot in the second half. So to make the playoffs, there's a couple of different ways that Vancouver can do it. Vancouver wins their game and Colorado beats Halifax. That puts the Warriors in. If Vancouver loses, they need all of Saskatchewan, New York, Calgary, and Rochester to lose. Rochester can split their games. Rochester has a doubleheader this weekend. They play Friday and Sunday. But Vancouver, if they lose, need Rochester to lose at least once. One of those games has to be a loss. If all of those things happen, Vancouver's in. If Vancouver wins and Halifax wins, you're going to need to get a wax pencil and find a window and start beautiful minding this. With those two wins, Vancouver then needs Saskatchewan to lose, Panther City to lose, and Albany to lose, or Saskatchewan to lose and Panther City wins. That puts Vancouver in the playoffs. You can feel free to rewind or whatever and try and figure this out. Again, sticksandlacrosse.com has the scenarios. Lacrosse Culture Daily has even further broken down scenarios. They're where you need to be if you're trying to find this stuff out. So if they lose, they need four other exact results. A win and a Halifax win makes it complicated, but not quite as specific as a loss makes it. So Vancouver, obviously all these teams just want to win their game. They play San Diego this weekend. San Diego didn't play that well a week ago. They lost in kind of this kind of ugly, sort of unfocused game against Saskatchewan. Catching a team off poor performance in a game that I don't believe can change San Diego's seed at all. I believe they're locked in. Could be good for Vancouver. Maybe San Diego takes it as an opportunity to get some guys healthy, recover, kind of get through the game and get going towards the playoffs. If they decide to dial it up and treat it like a playoff game come early, that's a little bit tougher. The game is in San Diego, which is also unfortunate for Vancouver. But that's how the Warriors can make the playoffs. New York, the Riptide, their path is not easy. There's two different ways that they can make it. Vancouver, Panther City, Saskatchewan, and Rochester all lose. If they all lose, New York is in. Rochester just has to split. They don't have to lose twice, just split. If New York wins, and then Vancouver loses, and either Panther City or Toronto wins, New York is in. Those are the New York paths. The path where they win is the one they'd prefer. You'd always rather win the game and try and then just hope for the results you need if that's the possibility. It's the one also that has fewer conditions to go right. New York losing means they need four other exact losing outcomes to make the playoffs. Not easy to get that. Additional context here, Albany, who there's their opponent this weekend, is ice cold. Ice cold. They have not won a game since March 8th. The schedule hasn't been all that difficult. They've just been that kind of listless lately. New York gets to play at home against a team that's pretty much backing into the playoffs. Urgency against a team that is a little shook, it's important. Albany is young. There is an old saying that young teams play young in the playoffs. This is effectively the playoffs. And this is also New York's, what was almost certainly their final home game ever as the Riptide in the Nassau Coliseum. So you should get, hopefully, a good crowd. Should be a really good environment for that game. And again, New York, if they win, it's not winning in. They need some other help, but a win makes things a little bit easier. Panther City is already at 9 wins. They have the easiest possible way to get in at this point. They're in the best position. To make things official, Panther City, any one of these things gets them in. If they win, they are in. If Halifax beats Colorado, Panther City is in. If Toronto beats Saskatchewan, Panther City is in. If New York and Vancouver both have the same result, so they both win or they both lose, then Panther City is in. So any of those things happening puts them in. They have one super easy path there off the top. Again, like everybody, win the game. They win the game, they're in. They are controlling their destiny, as they say. Eliminate all the other watching of games and needing of results and just win on the road on Saturday night. In that sense, they are in the best position of all these teams trying to get in. They'll know Vancouver's result before they play their game because Vancouver plays, if you're on the East Coast like me here, the late game on Friday night. But since they play at the same time as New York, they really don't know if that exact scenario will put them in or not. So they can't exactly like go into their game knowing what's up. Panther City has, in terms of opponents, I think has the best one of the weekend. They play Calgary, who's out of the playoffs. The other three are playing against teams that are already in. Is that an advantage? I don't know. Does it matter? Having nothing but the chance to end someone's season is a powerful motivator. Calgary has that. They can do it. And Panther City's on the road. They're making the trip to Calgary for that game. So Panther City already at 9-8. Again, they win, they're in, it's over. So they, of all these teams, probably have the best chance. They have the least weird scenarios for getting in. Saskatchewan, for the Rush, it starts with a win. That's the hard part. They're on their home floor, but they're playing Toronto. They're hosting the best team in the league. If they lose, they're done. There is no scenario where they lose and make the playoffs. They have to win. So along with their win, they need one of these other sets of things to happen. There's five other things. They need one of them to happen. They need Vancouver and New York to lose. They need Vancouver and Panther City to lose. They need Colorado and New York to lose. They need Colorado and Panther City to lose. Or they need New York and Panther City to lose. They need to win and have one of those pairs of losses. It's a tall task. Even the desired outcome of beat the best team in the league is not an easy way to start your playoff scenario conversation. as we said with Vancouver, who's playing San Diego, maybe Toronto takes it easy because they're in. They're locked in as the one seed. They cannot move down. They are where they are. Maybe they choose to get some guys healthy. Maybe they choose to just kind of take it easy and, you know, compete. But, you know, no one's going to take the week off, but not go balls to the wall. Your guys who have been banged up, maybe you kind of short shift them a little bit. If they dial it back, it opens the door for the rush. Saskatchewan has won two in a row. They have not yet had a three-game win streak this year. It would be their first if they win. And finally, Rochester. Mathematically alive. They only have 6 wins right now, but mathematically alive. They play 2 games this weekend. They play Friday, they play Sunday. They need to win both. And then basically they need everybody else who has 8 wins right now to lose. In that case, that means Saskatchewan, Vancouver, New York all lose. Rochester wins both their games. If exactly that and only that happens, Rochester finishes in the 8 seed and makes the playoffs. Hawks recent form, not good. They've lost their last 4. The schedule hasn't been easy. It's a tough go from a 4-game skid to a 2-game win streak, though. Just at the drop of a hat. But, you know, with your playoff life on the line, maybe they can do it. If anyone can do it, I guess it's Rochester. They started the year with 3 straight wins, and then they lost 6 straight, and then they won 3 straight. Losing the last 2 would make it win. If they lose their last 2 games this year, their season would go win 3, lose 6, win 3, lose 6. Nice and balanced, I guess. But pro sports never goes that way. The real beauty of all this, the last game of the weekend is Rochester and Philadelphia, Sunday afternoon. The final standings and who is in and who is out and where everybody finishes, is it really could come down to the last game of the regular season, that last Sunday game. To me, that's a sign you had a hell of a regular season, that the playoffs might not be fully decided until literally we've played every single game. Every single game can change things for somebody. So that's the NLL. That's where we are with that. I mean, if you hear all that and you're just like, my brain is broken, just watch the games, man. Everybody's going to be flipping from game to game like crazy. All the broadcast teams are great, and they'll be running you through the stuff as the games are on, and everybody will be scoreboard watching. It'll be one of those insane last day of the season in pro sports kind of days where everybody's flipping around from channels. You get as many screens as you can to try and keep track of who's going where and what needs to happen and all that. So it'll be good. I'm sure I'm gonna head out to New York for their last game, for the Riptide game, and I'm sure it'll be on the big board and they'll have the score check-ins all the, you know, throughout the game. Turning to the outdoors, the PLL, the Pro League, whose regular season is about 6 weeks away, folks. It's that close. PLL season, we will be seeing regular season games in about 6 weeks. On Thursday, they announced their Hall of Fame class for 2024. It will be Josh Sims, Kyle Sweeney, Brendan Mundorf, and my guy Lee Zink. Off the top, something to note, just 4 names. The first class in 2022, the first year they did it, had a full roster. They had 11 guys. They literally put a field team lineup worth of guys in. Last year, 6 guys. This year, just 4. I imagine when you have more of the PLL retirees, meaning guys who, you know, spent at least a couple of years in the PLL too, when they start hitting their eligibility, maybe the numbers go back up. But the size of the class is interesting to me. You know, it's in other pro sports, there, it's not like there's a mandated number of guys who should make it every year. You know, baseball, famously, you need to have X percentage of the vote. And if a year goes by where nobody gets it, then there's nobody going in the hall that year. I think there are more than 4 deserving players, probably, but 4 is the number. All 4 obviously are spectacular talents and very worthy Hall of Famers. All are game-changing, you know, in some cases, position-defining type players. I want to spend a quick moment on Lee Zink, though. To me, because, and I know you're going to hit me with it, it's just a Connecticut bias thing, but he illustrates to me an interesting point about defensemen and their evaluation when it comes for honors like this, just in general. To me, Zink is in the conversation for the best pure cover defender to ever do it. He's probably the guy I lead that conversation with for, in many cases. The list of guys who get left on an island against Jordan Wolf and don't need a slide doesn't have many names on it, but Zink's on it. He can do that. He can also guard Jesse Hubbard, and he can do it clean. I think I mentioned on Social Day, in 2011, on the season, he had 2 penalty minutes. Most years of his career, he was probably in the neighborhood of 4 or 5 penalty minutes a season. Just stayed out of the box and won the top matchup every week. But this is kind of what makes things interesting about him. There really aren't stats for what he does. If Zink played today, his game would still probably make him the best defender in the league. And he would probably appear on social media 0 times all season. He didn't have huge hits that drew fouls or stuff like that. He wasn't sliding across the crease and throwing bodies at people. He didn't throw big over-the-head checks to take the ball away. He wasn't throwing rusty gates. He didn't do anything that translated into what is valued as a defensive highlight today. He didn't run the ball over the midfield line and score. I think he had 1 career goal in 11 years. These days, a lot of defensemen, it's about, you know, in all caps, 2 bombs, yard sales, that kind of stuff. That's how younger fans measure defensive ability. But it's not hard to make a case that in terms of just ability to cover the guy with the ball, to eliminate another team's best player, I don't think it's hard to argue that Zink is better than any of the defensemen who are already in the Hall of Fame. But the others, a lot of them are, you know, they hammer people with big hits. They take the ball away with checks. You know, if you remember, I think he went in last year. Spallina's Hall of Fame resume from the PLL actually included his record number of penalty minutes in it. I don't think that's a measure of anything all that meaningful. And I'm not knocking Spallina here. He's still a Hall of Fame defender. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. My larger point is, you can't sort by stats, and penalty minutes I don't consider to be a positive stat. You can't sort by stats for defenders. It's not like, you know, on the offensive end, you shouldn't do it either, but we are often guilty of just sorting by points and picking the guy at the top of the list. Defense can't do that. Ground balls and cause turnovers for guys like Zink aren't a stat where he's going to fill the book up, but he is absolutely out there as the best defenseman in changing games. So it's hard to kind of quantify, and that's what makes... That's why I think his inclusion in the Hall is important, because you're never going to go back and look at the record book and be like, man, he killed it. The closest thing he has to a record is I think he might have the Outlaws record for games played for them or something like that. Like, you know, there's nothing in the record book where you say, man, this guy was dominant in this era. Just look at these stats. There are no stats. The lack of stats is the thing that might be the most impressive. In his career, when he was at Maryland, he had a stretch of 4 straight postseason games, 2 conference tournament games, 2 NCAA tournament games, where his matchup had 0 points. 4 straight games, the other team's top guy did not score a point because Lee Zink took them away. He wasn't crushing cause turnovers. He wasn't throwing out big hits. He wasn't winning a ton of ground balls. He was doing fine on ground balls, nothing that was otherworldly. To look at his stats is to be like, hey, I guess he's okay. He's probably a pretty good defender. He's fine. To watch him play and to see the other side of the score ledger and what's going on is to see his impact. So, again, is this just CT bias talking? Maybe. I mean, like, yes. Yes, it is. For at least a little bit, for sure. I can't take that out of myself. But I don't know if you're going to find too many people out there who are going to disagree with me either on that. I was very happy to see Lee Zink get his due, get into the Hall of Fame. I will certainly be there to see him get the jacket and everything in Baltimore this summer. The rest of these guys, whatever. I guess they're, you know, no. Obviously, they're special players. Look, I think Brendan Mundorf in particular, is the name I come up with most often for, man, he just played in the wrong era. And I don't mean that to say he wasn't a successful lacrosse player or something like that. He tore people up in his era. But the world today, with the number of like aggregator accounts and highlight posters, all those kind of things, Mundorf would have been everywhere. He would have been on you would have scrolled by him 30 times a day if you're on a lacrosse social media now. A mainstay. His highlights, his play was electric. Everything he did was appointment viewing. it would have been around the clock Mundorf on all these things too. Honestly, probably Kyle Sweeney too. Sweeney is rightfully, I think, one of the first names that should come up when you think offensive-minded polls. He could be out there dodging for Max if he wanted to. I don't know who posted it first. I saw Rosie share it. Rosie, I think, is the one who posted it. But he posted the clip of it's like an iconic highlight. It's perfect for what Kyle Sweeney's about. He has the ball on his stick. He gets just eats a huge hit at midfield. I think he gets blindsided. Eats a huge hit at midfield and gets knocked to the ground, but does not lose the ball. Gets to his feet without dropping the ball, runs by the guy that hit him, and runs a break for a goal that he scores himself. It's the perfect clip for Kyle Sweeney. Just eating hits, undeterred, running an offense with the pole. Josh Sims, I remember Josh Sims had a brief role working for the PLL. As far as I know, he's not still there anymore. But anyway, look, his playing career, outstanding. I still have bookmarks somewhere in my social, but he did it at Princeton. And I don't know why. It's just one of those things when I saw it happen, it just stuck with me. But I have a bookmark play of him picking up this ground ball where everyone else in this crowd is kind of doing the, it's a big scrum for a ground ball. Everyone's doing the youth lacrosse, rake at it, try and rake it over to my feet or into space so I can pick it up. And Sims just kind of comes over and just with one hand on a stick, just snaps it up off the ground. Like he's throwing a bullwhip at the ball, just snap, wrist, all wrist, pick it up to run, and then just runs to space and throws like a sidearm feed to somebody. And it's one of those plays where you saw it and you're like, everyone else in this field is incredible and doing remarkable things at lacrosse, but this guy, he's just playing a different game than everybody else. He's what he's doing is just different than what everybody else is doing. It was one of those plays that were, you know, where it doesn't matter how old you are, when you saw him make the play, you were like, he's just different. He's not playing the same game these other guys are playing. I still think of him that way. Like when I think of Josh Sims, he had an excellent pro career and everything, but I still think of him as this dominant physical midfielder at Princeton that was just unstoppable. This class gets their jackets, as we mentioned, that weekend in Baltimore. I like that it's kind of become the tradition that Baltimore is Hall of Fame weekend. That's the weekend they have the class there. They enshrine them at halftime. They get their jackets. They introduce them and everything. Everybody goes. If you're able to go that weekend, it's a very cool thing to go see. You get to see some all-time greats get Hall of Fame recognition, which is very cool. So, last year, I went to it last year too. Something funny happened while I was there. So I'm walking up to the media entrance for the game that day. I get there. I go up to the little tent that's next to the gate. They ask my name. Yeah, I'm Dan Arestia. Okay, it's going to be a minute. We're not letting people in yet. All right, no problem. I'll wait. So I'm waiting there by the gate, and Doc walks up. Brian Docherty walks up. Hall of Famer. I think he even had the jacket with him. He goes to the person taking the names. I think he's, I don't know if he's wearing the jacket. He's at least holding it. I feel like he might have been wearing it. But anyway, they say, oh, what's your name? He says, I'm Brian Docherty. Person says, well, you aren't on the list. You can't come in this way. And I'm like, oh, come on. Come on. Like he's the halftime show, you know? Docherty is standing there with a Hall of Fame jacket being told, hey, you're going to need to find a different entrance. You're not on the list here on Hall of Fame weekend. It was very funny to me. Anyway, a very recent conversation later, they let him in through the media entrance, and it was obviously all fine. But I still laugh thinking about him being told, well, you're going to need to find a different way in, Mr. Docherty. You're not on the list. Oh, boy. All righty. On to the college ranks. Let's look at college games. This is the last regular season game, I think, for some teams. Second to last game for some other teams. We're very much winding down here, but very much potential for a big impact this weekend. We talked about it a little bit on Tuesday, but the Patriot League is currently maximum chaos. There are currently six teams with a 4-2 conference record in the Patriot League. There's nine teams in the league. Six of them have a 4-2 record. Army, Navy, Loyola, BU, Colgate, Lehigh, all 4-2. Navy and Loyola play each other this weekend. BU and Lehigh play each other. So at least two teams are going to 5-2, and two teams are going to 4-3. In the Patriot League, top two seeds get a bye in the semifinals. Top overall seed gets to host. So these games are all massive at this point. With everybody tied right there, who gets to host and who gets a week off, that's you know. Obviously, the bye is huge. Getting to host is even better, though. And this should be framed by the fact that I really think, I can't imagine that this is anything other than a one-bid league. You want to go to the big dance, you need that AQ. You need to win the Patriot League. Doesn't look like anyone else is going to have an RPI that gets them considered for an at-large. So these teams playing for position this weekend, massive. Massive. We'll talk through, we'll do all the games in a second. But the Ivy, also a league still with a ton to sort out. I think Yale and Penn now have locked up spots in the Ivy tournament. They both have 4-1 records in conference right now, I think. So Cornell's at 3-1. They got the two games with Harvard and Dartmouth left. Princeton at 2-2 after that brutal loss to Brown, who suddenly can play their way into a tournament spot. Harvard and Bruno are there at 1-3. Dartmouth 0-4. So with Yale and Penn, two teams can still qualify. Cornell, I think if they split their remaining games is okay. It feels like they're pretty safely in. I think to me right now, Princeton and Brown, obviously teams to watch. Two Ivy League games left. Princeton's last two games are those two teams currently atop the standings, Yale and Penn. So Princeton's got a tough road left. Harvard really needs to win this weekend since Princeton, I think, holds the head-to-head against them. Otherwise, I think they need the Tigers to lose out. But unlike the Patriot League, it looks like the Ivy will not be a one-bid league. The RPIs for Yale, Cornell, and Penn are all strong. Penn has the worst one at 12. I think if Penn wins the Ivy tournament, we'll get some madness. If something happens like Brown wins the Ivy tournament, my God, can you imagine? Top overall seed hosts, which is big. If you blink now, you're going to be on the road. Everybody wants to host these tournaments, the top seed hosts. Ivy has had it at Columbia the last couple of years. Now top seed hosts. So everybody's playing to not have to get on the road. The A-Sun right now living up to the A-Fun moniker. Nobody, I don't think anybody out there saw this as Air Forces to lose, but I think it's kind of where we are right now. The Falcons have won 7 straight to run through A-Sun play. They also are, the A-Sun is one of those ones where the host is determined ahead of time, and Air Force is hosting the A-Sun tournament. So hosting and being the one seed is very much on the table for them. In the A-Sun, top two seeds get byes into the semis, then 3 and 6 play, 4 and 5 play. If the season ended today, I love that game so much. I love the premise of the game is so stupid. If the season ended today, it doesn't end today. But if it did, just imagine. Anyway, if the season ended today, Air Force at 7-0 would be the one seed. The Finns and the Utes are both 6-1. I believe Utah's head-to-head win gives them the two seed, but that would be Jacksonville playing Bobby Moe in the 3-6 and Bellarmine and Cleveland State in the 4-5. That can all change in a big way. Why? Because the season doesn't end today. Jacksonville and Air Force play this weekend. I'm telling you, folks, I know the games are great. Find a way to tear yourself away from the ACC and the Big Ten for a second, because Jacksonville Air Force is a game to watch. It's very much a game to watch. It's going to be great. A lot of the other conferences right now kind of looking like two horse races. Big East is going to come down to Denver and Georgetown, I think. I think both are likely tournament teams anyway. A-10, looking like a St. Joe's and Richmond race. The Big Ten will be fun. If Ohio State wins the Big Ten tournament or something like that happens, that's where you'll start getting fun scenarios, I think. But we'll get to that bridge and cross it in a couple of weeks. Anyway, let's go to the calendar here. Let's go game by game through our weekend, starting today, Positive Friday. Got a nice little Positive Friday schedule. 5 games today, 2 of them on linear, on cable. It's a nice way to start the weekend. We got Rutgers and Penn State, 6 o'clock tonight on BTN. I believe this is the season ender for both of these squads. Rutgers lost 3 of their last 4. The win came against Michigan 2 weeks ago. Penn State had the heartbreaker to Hopkins and OT. They really should have had, but they bounced back with a win against Michigan last week. As I see it standings-wise, I don't think this game has a huge impact. I think the byes in the Big Ten are going to Hopkins, Maryland, regardless of how the Hopkins-Maryland game this weekend ends, I think. So this, I think, is really just about who in Penn State and Rutgers want to play in that opening round. Penn State is the team in better form right now. I'm going to be on Penn State. The line is 4. Nittany Lions -4. That is not enough to scare me away. So give me Penn State in this one. Navy Loyola, the other linear TV game. It's on CBS Sportsnet tonight at 7 o'clock. These two are two of the 4-2 squads, as we said, that are battling to try and get to 5 wins and stay near the top of the league. Navy's coming off the loss to Army. They had won 3 straight before that. Loyola has won 4 in a row. They aren't really beating anybody up. But they're coming out on the right end of these close games right now. Navy's -1.5 here at plus money. So I think if you really like the mids, you go nuts here. The money line is about even. I like Navy's defense in this one to frustrate Loyola. So I'm going to take Navy -1.5 at plus money. Yale and Albany. Yale coming off the midweek win over Hofstra. And I wish I'd seen it. I had the stream on. I just couldn't see the game. And just for a second. And I don't just want to do the lacrosse streams are bad conversation again and again. I know lacrosse Twitter loves to just do that, but I'm not here to do that right now. But I mean, this one was as bad as it's been, I think. I could not watch the game. Judging from people I spoke to, it wasn't just me. I got a minute of action, 5 minutes of spinning buffering wheel over and over for the duration. It was frustrating. It was very frustrating because the game was great. Yale played, had to fight off a Hofstra team that was winning faceoffs and giving them everything they can handle. So anyway, Yale, like we said, overcame a faceoff disadvantage and gutted out a win there. Matt Brandau had another game of just piling up stats. A lot of the Yale single season records are mostly of the no one is ever breaking that variety. Brandau obviously has the career records, which were attainable. The single season records at Yale are nuts. Goals is John Reese with 82, which I think is also the NCAA record. And yeah, no one is ever breaking that. Or at least not this year. 82 goals. I don't think so. Assists is Jason O'Neill with 73. Brandau's currently 25 away from that. Maybe. Points in a season is Ben Reeves with the 115-point season. Brandau is 29 back from that. I think the points in a season one is the most attainable of those, maybe. It's feasible he could reach that. He has 2 regular season games left. He's got at least 1, as many as 2 Ivy League tournament games left, and then at least 1 NCAA tournament game. So if he goes deep postseason run, particularly in NCAA, if he goes to if they make championship weekend, it's absolutely striking distance for that record. But let's not count our chickens here. For this game, Yale needs to figure out faceoffs. Ramsey, Rodriguez are carrying injuries, and their not being available has turned a major strength of Yale's into suddenly a weakness. They have the horses to overcome that. They can still score a ton of goals. But it's a game, it's going to be interesting. I think Albany likes to play the up-and-down kind of game, and if they want to do that, Yale will say thank you. So Yale's a 5-goal favorite in this one. They are on the road, but I am going to take the Bulldogs. I'm going to take Yale, even though their record against the spread is horrendous. They're 2-9-1 against the spread, but I'm taking the Bulldogs. Bucknell and Army. Black Knights coming off the big win against Navy. They got out to an early lead in that game. Navy came back, and then Army was able to put them away. They got Paul Johnson back, which I think it was Terry Foy, I think, who pointed out for IL this week. This is the kind of thing that only happens with, the service academies. Johnson's missed basically the whole year with injury. And at anywhere else, really, you just go and get another year of eligibility or whatever. But not at West Point. He makes his season debut in late April. He'll play whatever, handful of games this year, as many more as that Army can squeeze out of the season. And that'll be it. Scored a big goal late in that game, though. And he makes the offense that much better because he's a really good player. I still think Army has the tools from personnel to coaching to everything in between to beat anybody. I think they can beat anybody. But late in the year, West Point kind of has a way of fading. In part because everyone does. Guys start getting tired. Fatigue sits in. Your soreness catches up. It's harder to recover. But life for a student-athlete at West Point isn't like life anywhere else. You might be light on sleep. Academics are a little bit harder. There's just not as many hours in the day to just kind of, do nothing but rest. So it just makes it really hard to be an Army athlete this time of year. But Bucknell's a 7-goal dog here. I'm going to take the Bison to stay within 7 because Patriot League. But Army should win this game. They're better at every position. Lafayette and Lemoyne, the last Friday game. Leopards, no doubt, riding very high off their win against BU. Lafayette has had some battles this year. They lost to Navy by a goal. They kind of hung with Colgate for a while. They were within five of Army, which is not nothing. I don't think Lafayette's a pushover by any means. Lemoyne's in the tough spot. They lost to Bucknell last week, but they kept it close. I think Lemoyne tends to try and play slower games, grind it out against teams, capitalize on mistakes, and be efficient. The goalie play and the faceoffs for them are going to be critical. If they can be efficient and limit the turnovers, they can stay within the margin. So I'm going to take Lemoyne to cover in this one. All right. That's the appetizers. That's the first course on Friday. The main course, the entrees, Saturday. Plenty of games on linear cable on Saturday, both in the men's and women's world, I should note. ACC Network, CBS Sportsnet, BTN, ESPNU, they all have games this weekend. I think they have some men's and women's games. It's quite the TV slate. And of course, as usual, ESPN Plus will have just about everything. We'll start with Canisius and Sacred Heart. I have not yet seen the line for this one. If you have, can you send it to me, please? Sacred Heart remains as hot as a $2 pistol. Eight straight wins, all covers, and most of them by wide margins. Canisius has won two in a row, but they were close games with the Mount and Wagner. Not exactly confidence-inspiring wins for me. I'd need to see a massive line here to take Canisius. You know, and even then, I probably wouldn't do it. I'm not going to be the guy to pick an eight-game winning streak to come to an end. Sacred Heart, all the way, in the dark. Queens and Mercer. Mercer's a three-goal favorite here. They've now lost seven in a row. They're sitting at 2-8. They lost last week to Air Force. Queens has been pretty good against the spread. I think I have their against the spread record like 7-3 in the games where the spread was available. They covered in the last two. I'm going to ride with Queens here. Give me Queens to cover. Notre Dame and UNC. The Irish are a six-goal favorite. They are on a six-game winning streak. All six of those against good teams. The Irish just really don't have much in the way of cupcakes on the schedule. They very much look like a team that's ready for all comers right now, to me. Notre Dame does. UNC is on a seriously cold run. They've lost four in a row. They've gone under in six in a row. They battled back to keep it respectable against Cuse last week, but I don't think that game was really as close as the final. The kids are good at UNC. Duffy's legit. Petro's legit. They're going to be stars, but this year is, they're developing. They're learning. Notre Dame is just playing a different game than Carolina is right now, so I'm going to go with the Irish here. Give me Notre Dame minus the six. Bellarmine and Detroit Mercy. The Titans have lost two in a row to the ASUN Powers. This is not an easy schedule for them to close the year. They won against Queens and Lindenwood, so they have some conference wins, but they haven't put up much of a fight against the heavyweights. They're an 8.5-goal dog on the road at Bellarmine. Bellarmine has won 5 of 6. The one loss in there is Air Force. This is a big one for them because they want to try and hang around at the top of the standings, and they got Jacksonville next week. So I think they win big. I think they win comfortable in this one. And then this is their home finale for the season. So give me Bellarmine to cover the 8.5 in this one. Binghamton and Bryant. Bryant lost to UVM a week ago, but their recent form has been pretty good. This is, I think, an important one for America East play. Bryant needs to get the positive mojo going if they want to try and win this conference, head to the big dance. I think they'll have a face-off edge in this one. That said, Binghamton's hot. Four straight wins, all covers against conference opponents. They waxed UMBC last week. I'm going to take a hot Binghamton team getting goals. I think Binghamton's plus 2.5 here, so give me Binghamton. Lehigh and BU. BU is coming off a stunner of a loss to Lafayette on basically a buzzer beater. They've dropped two straight, both close. One of them was to Yale. The Terriers played Duke to a one-goal game. They played Yale to a two-goal game. They can hang with most people out there when they're at their best. They can. I don't want to put it this way, but I'm going to put it this way. The Lafayette loss really doesn't matter because it's Patriot League title or bust anyway, and BU's making the Patriot League tournament, so... Lehigh beat Colgate last week, and as I said on Tuesday, I have no idea what's going to happen in this conference. None. I will be taking the goals in Patriot League games basically for the rest of 2024. So give me Lehigh plus the 3.5 here. Cleveland State and Utah. Utes are on the road, a 6.5-goal favorite. They've won 5 in a row, 8 of their last 9. They need to win to keep pace with Air Force and ASUN play. These teams at the top of the ASUN are all just trying to make sure that they stay there. Falcons and the Finns play this week, and a Jacksonville win plus a Utah win creates a mess at the top of the ASUN standings. But the best kind, like a bunch of teams tied at the top. It's fun. Utah won't be scoreboard watching, but they'll be interested. Vikings still in the mix for the ASUN tournament. These games are critical now, though. They lost to Bellarmine last week. This is a big one for them. I'm going to go with Maximum Chaos. I think that's the Utah win, so I'm going to take Utah minus the 6.5. Cornell-Harvard. Harvard, a 2.5 goal dog. They lose to Penn a week ago. They've lost 4 of 5. Harvard needs this one bad. They lose this game. It's basically a playoff game, I think. Losing probably knocks them out of the Ivy League tournament. No Ivy League tournament means no big dance. Harvard, with a bit of desperation, makes them dangerous. They have a weapon in Sam King who can keep pace with this Cornell offense. Cornell lost to Notre Dame last week in a playoff atmosphere, but the Big Red do look like the class of the Ivy right now. They're at home, but I'm going to take the back-against-the-wall Harvard team. So give me the Crimson plus the 2.5. Providence and Denver. How about those Friars? 2 straight wins. Beat Marquette, beat Villanova. Covering in 4 straight, including covering against Georgetown and St. Joe's. Do not take Ryan Bell and these Providence boys lightly. They are plus 5.5 at home against Denver here. Denver's won 3 in a row. They put a chokehold on the Big East with the win over Georgetown, but they're scary. Their only losses this year are Yale and Duke. Denver's a scary team. But that said, I'm going to take the goals here. I'm going to take Providence plus the 5.5. I'm going to take the Friars. I'm a believer. Georgetown, St. John's. Hoyas are 9.5 goal favorite. They have an 8-game win streak get snapped a week ago by Denver. Georgetown has only covered 3 times as a favorite this year, and the big lines have not been great for them. I think they kind of know where they are in the Big East pecking order now after last week. The Johnnies have covered in 5 of 6. These big lines are fun plays for me. I like to do it, so I'm going to do it again. I'm going to take St. John's here to cover the 9.5 on the road at Georgetown. Hobart and High Point. High Point's on the road in this one. 2.5 goal favorite. The Panthers lost to Richmond last week, but have been in pretty decent form of late. Richmond stifling them is not alarming. Richmond stifles a lot of people. Hobart has been cold, losing 4 in a row. They got beaten by St. Joe's a week ago. Schedule hasn't been easy, but look, Richmond waxed Hobart. This will be kind of a similar opponent. I'm going to take High Point here. I'm going to take High Point. 2.5 goal favorite. VMI and Marist. Marist is minus 2.5 on the road. They've won 3 in a row, including an epic one against Siena, and then by a convincing margin against LIU. I think the arrow is going up for the Foxes right now. VMI lost to Quinnipiac by a goal last week. They've covered in 4 of their last 5, though. As good as Marist has been, they are playing a lot of close games lately. I'm going to take the goals here, so I'm going to take VMI plus the 2.5. I think Marist wins the game, though. Towson-Monmouth. Tigers just keep cooking. 5 wins in a row for them. They are rolling CAA play. They're a 7.5 goal favorite here. As good as they've been during the win streak, they have not been automatic against the spread. They're playing some closer games. Sometimes it was like, yeah, the weather sucked and it was a sloppy rock fight, so that happens. But they aren't running people over necessarily. Monmouth has covered in 5 of their last 6, and they've gone under in 5 straight. So I'm going to take them to stay to that. I'm going to take Monmouth plus the 7.5 against Towson. Tigers win. Monmouth covers. UMBC, NJIT. The bloom is off the Highlanders' rose. They've lost 5 in a row. Oh, no. They've lost 5 in a row after starting 7-0. They are winless in conference play, I think. They're a 4-goal underdog here at UMBC. Last week, the Retrievers got smacked by Binghamton, but they had some decent results before that. They have wins over Bryant. They play Albany to a 1-goal game. Okay. At their best, they're an America East upset bid kind of squad. I think they are the better team here. I'm going to take them laying the goals. What? No, I'm not going to take them laying the goals. I'm doing this until the wheels fall off, and that means we ride or die until the end. Highlanders plus 4. NJIT is my pick. UMass and Richmond. Richmond's a 5-goal favorite. They've won 3 straight. They're charging through A-10 play, basically towards a date with St. Joe's next week. UMass beat the Bonnies last week. They had lost 4 of 5 before that. I think Richmond's winning the game. They're a perfect 8-0 when they're favored this year. They covered 6 times. 5 goals is a lot, and you don't want to be in the habit of betting against UMass and that and those kind of teams in big spreads and everything this time of year. But I think Richmond's too good for us. I'm going to take Richmond minus the 5 here. St. Joe's and the Bonnies. The Hawks have won 8 straight. They've covered in their last 3 and 6 times in that 8-game win streak span. They've covered. They are hot. It's a big line here. It's 9.5. They've really only gotten a really big line one other time this year against St. John's, and they didn't cover then. The Bonnies offense managed 3 goals against UMass, and they're not hitting double digits very often. I think the Hawks are cruising. I'm going to take, even with the giant line, I'm going to do it and take St. Joe's minus the 9.5. Air Force and Jacksonville. I said it above. I really think this is one of the best games of the weekend. A win for the Finns creates some madness atop the ASUN standings. These are teams playing for buys, playing for any little edge they can get because they, I mean, for all these guys, it's about winning that conference tournament to go to the big dance. Any little tiny advantage you could squeeze out in these last couple of weeks is huge. I think this game's going to have playoff atmosphere. It's at Air Force, tough travel for Jacksonville. The Finns are plus 1.5 here at bad value, pretty close to even on the money line. They've won 3 straight by a wide margin. 8 of their last 9, the only loss is Utah. Air Force has won 7 in a row. We don't have to rehash all this. We talked about it already. I'm going to take Jacksonville here. I feel like they have the horses. I feel like Jacksonville has the horses to win the ASUNs. I'm going with the Finns. Brown and Dartmouth. Bruno doing Bruno things, man. Just being a wrecking ball. The win last week against Princeton's massive. It keeps them alive for the Ivy League tournament. It puts Princeton in a corner. The season, you can't say it's lost because the Ivy League tournament's still in play. As long as the conference tournament's in play, the NCAA tournament's in play, and you know, you feel like you got Bruno finds a way to just find some magic. But at the end of the day, their record this year is, I'm sure, not what they had hoped, what they had planned. The Princeton win is still one he should feel really good about. I think this is a difficult conference opponent. They got to win. Bruno is at home in this one. They're a 3.5 goal favorite. So Vegas is loving Bruno off of the win against Princeton. They've only been favored 2 other times this year. They lost both those games outright. Dartmouth's coming off the Yale loss. They put a bit of a scare into the Bulldogs. They got out to a pretty good size lead early in that game. They can jump on you. I think if they do that here, I don't know if I trust Brown to have the horses to battle back the way that Yale does. I'm going to take the goals here. Give me Dartmouth plus the 3.5. Give me the big green. Drexel and Delaware. The Hens, a 4.5 goal favorite. They are winners of 4 in a row, 5 of 6. The wins are looking more and more comfortable. The momentum is positive. It feels like a collision course between Delaware and Towson in the CAA. Drexel won against Hofstra recently, but it's been kind of a rough ride for them since March started. They're 2-6 over the last 8 games. The wins are Hampton and Hofstra. The losses haven't always been all that close. I'm going to take Delaware here against the Drexel team that feels like they're a little bit out of sorts right now. So I'm going to go with the Hens minus 4.5. Stony Brook and Fairfield. The Seawolves are on the road visiting Fairfield this week. Enjoy some Colony Grill, Seawolves fans. They are a 2.5 goal favorite. They lost to Delaware last week in a decently close game. Ultimately, they have 1 win in their last 6, though, and it was against Drexel, who we just said has not been great lately. They're good against the spread, though, Stony Brook is. Fairfield needs this one. A win here, and then you presume they get a win next week against Hampton, I think would have them looking like they're in position to make the CAA tournament and make, you know, and then you throw your dice and see what happens. They beat Monmouth last week. They have wins over Drexel and Hofstra. They played Towson pretty close. I think the Stags are not to be overlooked right now. I'm going to take them getting goals at home in this one. Give me Fairfield plus the 2.5. Hofstra and Hampton. I don't see a line for this game yet, or it wasn't up as I was making my game notes and stuff, so I don't have anything to go on, but we've sort of gotten the run of things here for how these Hampton lines usually go. If the line is up past 15, 16, 17, that ballpark, I'm going to take Hampton. Otherwise, I'm probably taking Hofstra. Marquette and Villanova. Been a tough year for Marquette. They've now lost 8 of 9 after their 3-0 start. The one win in there is the Bonnies. The offense has not been producing much. Even in wins, the totals are low. They've been good at covering the big lines. The spread here is only 3, though. Marquette, 3-goal dog at home. Villanova beats St. John's. It's been a bit choppy before that. This feels like just a game Villanova gets to me. I think it's a scrap, but I'm going to take Villanova to come out on top. Give me the Wildcats. LIU, Quinnipiac. LIU is slept on. I will say it. With the caveat that I hate the term slept on, because 99% of the time it's applied to someone that is in no way being slept on. But LIU is being slept on. They're just hanging out with a 9-3 record. This is probably their best win. Like, the 9 wins are not exactly against Duke, but 9-3 is Parcells, man. You are what your record says you are. They are hosting Quinnipiac. They are a 1.5-goal underdog. Quinnipiac has lost 3 of 5 since that 7-0 start. They lost to Sacred Heart by a goal, which is a good loss. They beat VMI by a goal last week, which is kind of an ugly win, but a win. They have not covered in their last 5 games. I'm taking LIU. Taking LIU. Wake up on LIU. Don't sleep on them anymore. Cuse and UVA. The first game in an ESPNU doubleheader on Saturday. UVA is a 1.5-goal favorite in the dome. They're favored in the dome. Syracuse fans, how does that make you feel? You got a game in the dome and you're the underdog. How's that feel? That crowd better be jumping. Virginia lost to Duke a week ago, which snapped 7 in a row for them. Their losses are now Duke and Hopkins. Schellenberger looked a little hobbled in that game, but I think Coach Lars Tiffany confirmed after the game that it was just dehydration. He got the IV after the game and all that. Matchups in this one are great. Billy Dwan's going to get his toughest cover of the year in Connor Schellenberger. And I say that knowing that he has guarded Brendan O'Neill this year. Spallina gets to take a shot at Cole Kastner. Pat March going to be back on the sideline, which definitely matters. I think if Cuse has a spell like they did last week, where they were up against Carolina 10-4, it was a step on their throat and bury the moment, and they couldn't do it. If they get that opportunity in this game and they don't do it, UVA wins the game. They don't Carolina their way back to within 1. They win if they get to that point. I think faceoffs could be a big difference here. I'm going to take Hughes. I can't take Hughes getting goals in the dome. I have to. I can't not do that. I have to take Syracuse here. Syracuse plus the 1.5 in the dome. It feels like you can't say no. Lindenwood and Bobby Moe. Robert Morris is a 6-goal favorite on the road. Lindenwood is winless. It's a brutal year for them. I feel for them. I really do. It's their final year. They never even really got the chance to try and build into a D1 competitive team. It just sucks. I hope all those players find new homes. They have successful lacrosse careers in college, whatever level they want to pursue it at. You know, it's unfortunate. I guess I'll take Bobby Moe. Kind of a downer. Holy Cross and Colgate. Holy Cross is at home in this one, an 8.5-goal dog. They've lost 8 in a row. None have been all that close. Colgate lost to Lehigh a week ago, a team that Holy Cross actually did play close at a loss. The Patriot League, man. Nobody knows. Colgate had won 4 of 5 and covered in all 5 before that. They lose outright to Lehigh, of course, right? I'm just going to do the George Costanza here with Patriot League games and just whatever the instinct says I should do the opposite. I will continue to just, I'm taking goals in every Patriot League game. So I'm taking Holy Cross, plus 8.5. Hop and Maryland, game of the weekend in my eyes. I wish this was the primetime game, but it is actually in the afternoon. This one is for the Big Ten regular season crowd. This is the second of the ESPNU doubleheader. So it's on linear cable. Hopefully it draws a good number. We'll see what that's like. I don't know what I got to go look and see what the NBA playoffs, NHL playoff situation is. But if you're up against those games, it's a tough audience. But, you know, you hope it does well. Like I said, Big Ten regular season crown on the line will provide some serious forward momentum into the postseason for the winner. To say nothing of the fact that this rivalry in this game is like 130 years old. If you can watch one game all weekend, I think it's this one. Hopkins is a 1.5-goal favorite at home. Maryland has won 3 straight in Big Ten play since losing to Michigan. They're doing it with defense. They're limiting very good players to low goal totals. What makes it different is Hop just has so many guys who can hurt you this year. Ajax probably guards Angeles, and then Hop can go elsewhere from there. I think both teams' defensive midfield units will be a key in this game, Maryland's in particular. The Terps need to be ready to support against matchups like Collison on a shorty, Ayers, you know, on a shorty and an invert, those kind of things. It's going to be a great scheme and execution type of day, I think, for Coach Tillman. These are the games where he shows you how good he is. So I'm going to say it's a one-goal game in the end. So give me the Terps. Give me Maryland plus the 1.5. Manhattan and Wagner. Wagner is a 1-13 team. The one win for them is Marist, which isn't bad. They've covered in back-to-back games. They're plus 8.5. That's a gigantic line for an opponent like Manhattan. Both these teams like to play low-scoring games. They go under a ton. I'm going to take the goals. So give me Wagner plus the 8.5. Mount and Siena. Mount St. Mary's is at home in this one. They're a 3-goal dog. They're currently sporting a 1-13 record, and the one is a win against Wagner by a goal. Yikes. They have a decent against-the-spread record lately. They've covered in 3 of their last 4. They're playing some tight games, but they ain't winning them. Siena's coming off their miracle comeback. They scored, whatever it was, 4 goals in about 50 seconds to win against Manhattan. The Saints are one of the best teams in the country against the spread this year. They have an under 500 record. They are 10-3 against the spread. They covered in 4 straight. As a favorite, I don't love them as much, but I do not love the Mount. So Siena has positive vibes for me right now. Coming off that comeback, you got to be riding high. I'm going to take the Saints here. The Saints -3. Princeton and Penn. Princeton is a 1.5-goal favorite at plus money. They are coming off the loss to Brown, so hearing 1.5-goal favorite is shocking, but then you see what the value is, and it makes sense. Maybe, I guess, I don't know. We talked about the Ivy situation, I guess, a bit already, but just to reiterate, I think it's time for the Tigers to get desperate. I think they're playing playoff games now. Penn beat Harvard last week and are already in the Ivy League tournament, I believe. If they want to host, they need these wins. Penn plays the low-scoring games. I think they're going to lean on Lavelle and Carroll to shut down the opposition's top guns, as they do every week. McAsee and Lavelle will be a good matchup. I'm going to take Penn here at crap value, so give me Penn. UMass Lowell and Vermont. UVM on the road, a 10.5-goal favorite. They beat Bryan a week ago. UVM still has yet to win 2 games in a row this year. I think this is the week that changes. They won last week. I think they're winning this week. Henry Dodge is going to make it take it. I think UVM builds kind of an early lead. Lowell is winless. They covered last week against Merrimack, but it was just the second time all year. I'm all over UVM in this one. All signs say cats to me, so I'm going to take UVM. Ohio State at Michigan, the game. This is really the only possible game and matchup that could keep Hopkins, Maryland out of primetime, is this one. Because it has more national appeal than any other matchup in almost any other matchup in college sports in general. So this is 7:00 Saturday night on BTN. This is the game, the primetime Saturday game. Ohio State lost a heartbreaker last week to Hop in OT. They had the 1-goal heartbreaker to Maryland before that. They are right there. They're right there. They're knocking on the door. I think their defense and Fayok can keep them in games. The Buckeyes are -1.5 in this game at plus money. They've covered in 3 in a row. Michigan has lost and failed to cover in 3 in a row. They've been cold for a bit. They've lost 5 of 6. It's a hard part of their schedule right now. The Big Ten dance is what it's all about at this point. I'm sure they'd rather play Maryland again than deal with Hopkins. Ohio State's defense keeps these games a battle. So I'm just going to take the goals. I'm going to give my pick to Michigan here. Michigan plus the 1.5. And then we have just one game on Sunday. Merrimack and Albany. I haven't seen a line yet. I don't think there is one yet because Albany has their game against Yale tonight first. In the dark, I'll be leaning Albany. The MAC has won 2 straight, but the opponents are NJIT and Lowell, and the results weren't all that convincing. Their best win is a Sacred Heart win, but it was on February 10th. Does that still mean anything at this point? I don't know. Everybody's so different from 2 months ago. Merrimack has been pretty poor against the spread this year, so I will be on Albany in the dark in that one. That's the weekend slate. I mean, my God, what a weekend. You got the NLL where every game is going to be a nail-biter, a scoreboard watcher, figure out who's in and who's watching from home, getting ready to play Summer Box or PLL. You got the PLL Hall of Fame class that's out, and that regular season is 6 weeks away. The draft is, I mean, 2+ weeks away, 3 weeks away. Like, and then this college slate, everybody's, you know, playing for their lives in some cases, trying to make a conference tournament and keep their season going. It's just a crazy time of year. So enjoy the games this weekend. Thank you for coming back again and for sticking around with me. And we will see you next time.